We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hey guys, Katie Hunt here, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp. And on today's episode of Proof to Product, I'm chatting with Emma James and Bailey Rivera, the owners of Antiquaria. These women are savvy business owners, you guys. They've made some big transitions in their business over the last 7 years. They started selling vintage pieces, hand calligraphy work, and now they focus their time and effort on their product line of stationery goods, such as gift wrap, notebooks, and greeting cards. On the episode today, they'll tell their story of starting their business, talk about how pivoting at different points strengthened their business model, and how prioritizing their personal happiness has enabled them to grow. They'll also share some great nuggets about what inspires them when creating new products, as well as logistics for how they determine which product categories to tackle next. Well, ladies, thank you so much for joining me today. It's always fun and a pleasure to get to chat with you, and it's especially fun when it's duos like this. So let's start at the very beginning. How did you two meet? I assume, was it in Austin, since you guys were both there for a bit?
Yes. We met, I was working in a stationery store, and Bailey walked in one day with her calligraphy portfolio. She had just started a calligraphy business, and I ended up hiring her to do the calligraphy for my wedding invitations in 2010. And we instantly hit it off and started toying around with the idea of starting a business. And one day over margaritas, we're like, let's start a business. And like literally 2 days later, we were in the county clerk's office registering a business.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love it.
The rest is history.
Wow. Okay. So the next day you were registering the business. How long until you guys had kind of found your groove and decided what types of products you wanted to do? And you know, you said that was in 2010, right? But you
2010. Oh my goodness. So we're like the queen of pivoting. When we started the business, we didn't want to do design anymore.
Interesting.
And so we were selling vintage homewares, specifically China. And so we spent all of our time going to estate sales and finding all this amazing vintage stuff, because that's one of our passions, is anything vintage, really.
Yeah.
But then we started just getting emails. People had seen our stuff on Oh So Beautiful paper, and they wanted our designs for their wedding. And so we started doing custom wedding designs as well, and rubber stamps. Mm-hmm. And so then the business started to grow, and we had this, like, we did vintage, we did stamps, we did paper. It was all over the place. And so, Bailey, what year was it that we decided to let go of the vintage? 2012?
No, much later. 14?
So in 2014, we decided only paper. Mm-hmm. This is crazy, mm-hmm, because people would ask us what we did. And like on any given day, I'd have to decide what I was going to explain, because our business was too crazy to explain under one.
It was like two separate businesses, essentially, grown to be like very different processes for both custom, you know, custom clients, and then doing all of the vintage shopping and photography for listing photos and all of that. So we were running two separate businesses.
Where were you listing all your vintage stuff? Was that on your own website, or was that through Etsy? Mm-hmm. Or
it was on our website. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That is essentially two businesses, one where you're creating the work and the product, and one where you're sourcing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, the demand for our design services started to outweigh the demand for the vintage goods. And so we just kind of followed that. And that's, I think, one thing that Bailey and I are really good at, is knowing when to make changes and not being scared to do it.
Yeah.
And so we got rid of the vintage and only did custom. And then we took paper camp, because we were thinking about doing custom wedding albums. And so we were like, that would be the natural next step. And then we took paper camp, and there was so much talk about greeting cards. We're like, oh, okay, well, maybe greeting cards is where it's at. And so we're like, well, let's, you know, and we started doing all the numbers, and we're not printers.
Right.
And so to make margins work on custom wedding albums, we were like, we're doing the same amount of work, but we're going to make less money. So it didn't really make sense. So we started designing into this product line and discovered that we really loved it and just went for it.
That's awesome.
And it's, and I mean, it's, we're the happiest we have been. Definitely.
So let's talk more about that, your product line. I mean, you guys have a beautiful, beautiful aesthetic, and it is a very cohesive line, which, you know, we talk about this a lot in bootcamp of like, focus on your product first and really focus on building out a cohesive product line. And I feel like you guys are one of the main examples I go to when I want to point out somebody that's doing it very well. So major kudos to you guys for that. But what, of course, but what inspires you when you're developing new artwork and new products?
Well, we actually talked about this the other day because we realized that throughout all the years of working together, no matter what we're working on, we have this like very synergistic, cohesive way of approaching the way we work. And partially, I think it's from my trend forecasting background, but we usually start, we have the like most amazing secret Pinterest board you'll ever see, but we'll start by collecting inspiration, and it just kind of like, we'll just pin stuff or pull stuff like as we're working and stuff. And then when we're ready to start designing, we kind of like go through and review. And usually we have like a pretty clear idea of like whatever's inspiring us.
Mm-hmm.
So for this collection that's coming out, we have a black and white collection because we've been wanting to do that. And so sometimes it's just color palettes, like black and white, and then everything within that's going to be black and white, but the imagery may, it's vastly different within it. Mm-hmm. And then the other collection we worked on, we're calling the Outdoorsman Collection, and it's kind of inspired by camping and vintage, like ephemera of like 70s
Americana.
Summer camp and,
yeah,
and road trips and, just outdoorsy things. So
we decide on that collection, and then we start pulling together designs that fall under that, and then targeting what product category we need. So like birthday cards, thank you cards, Father's Day cards to hit for whether it's like a May release or December release.
Mm-hmm. What about like you guys have kind of started to enter into other product categories, meaning other types of products. Didn't you do some notebooks?
We have notebooks.
And what else are you working on?
We have notebooks and gift wrap. We just had a meeting this morning. We want to do more office supplies.
Fun.
Do like really kind of cool, like vintage inspired office supplies. I was just working on some designs for some really cute erasers, but
fun.
Yeah, we've been trying to figure out where we want to expand. You know, the cost of expanding any new product is super expensive. So we try to be smart and conservative about where we expand because we've found that greeting cards by far sell the most.
Yeah. Well, and it is, you know, not just for new companies, but for seasoned, it's a low cost of entry, right? Like, you know, by now, you know, your quantities that you're running things in, you know, your margins, you know, what you're going to make on things. I do think that's why we talk a lot about greeting cards. Cause it's an area where people can really dial in on their product line before they expand out into other categories. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that expanding into new product categories can be costly.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a ton of questions from people that are asking about how much inventory to run for new products, because a lot of them are like you. And I was the same way in my stationery line too. If I didn't print my own stuff, I outsourced it all. And it's scary, right? Like when you're trying to figure out how much, like how much to run. If you, you know, if you buy a larger number of items, the price per piece goes down, but you also don't know if it's going to sell yet. You know, you haven't really tested the market with a new category. So what are your thoughts on this, and how do you guys decide how much inventory to keep on hand? Or maybe we should step back a bit and say how much inventory to run for a first round of something.
So when we started, Bailey, correct me if I'm wrong, but when we really, like we switched printers to a much more high volume print shop, and we started, we were printing, every time we had a new design, it was 250 of each.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I mean, just, it's, I think we're still in this 2 years later, we just go for it and we print 1,000 of each. And if it's not a great seller, that's great. It's going to be around a while. We don't have to reproduce it. If it is a great seller, we may need to reproduce that in 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still trying to gauge, but we find that if we do the same amount on everything, when we're kind of being like, what's a good seller? Like, we can look at our inventory and know that, like, that group of cards we produced at the same time. So if there's only 500 left of that one, that's great, versus there's 900 left of a different one.
Right.
So it's like when we're trying to figure out reordering and stuff like that, it's an easy way just to remember, like, we always just do the same amount now.
But Bailey, when you guys were starting out, did you always, you started with 250, right? Was that the lowest you ever did, or did you guys ever run less than that?
I think it was the lowest we did. We maybe did some trial runs of our line before the stationery show, but we basically, yeah, maybe it was lower before we switched to our commercial printer. Mm-hmm. We might have been ordering more piecemeal, like 50s at a time or hundreds, and just like very, like, we definitely started off conservative. And then after the stationery show, I went and switched all of our card printing and wrap printing to our commercial printers that do it. And we fulfilled that first stationery show all the orders with the inventory, which was actually really crazy because we had all the orders and then we were like, hurry up and print this stuff. And we've never had them print the stuff before except for samples. So that we had like a big delay in our shipments because of that, but it was definitely the safest road to go for that first little transition period.
I agree with you. I usually caution people to be more conservative, especially because we do want them to have a large enough line, right? We always talk about 48, have at least 48 greeting cards in your collection before you wholesale. So, you know, that's a big investment for people if they're going to be doing, you know, 250 per card. So,
yeah, I mean, we spend a lot of money on production. I mean, we have like 45 new cards coming out in May. And if that's 1,000 a piece, like, we're producing 45,000 cards just for the new product. So it's a lot, you know? And so that adds up, but we're finding that that's the most streamlined way for us to do it at this point. But it still is scary. I think every time we do it, we're like, oh man, I hope this works out. I
hope they sell.
I guess I just wanted to point out to the audience, though, that, like, it's okay to start small. And as your business grows and you start to hone in on your numbers and you start to see what your selling patterns are, like, that's where it's, that's where you want to kind of, you know, reassess and start to increase your production amounts, your volume. Yeah.
And I will say this about Bailey and I, is that we're extremely financially frugal, and we never taken a business loan. The business has always supported itself. And so we kind of are like, if the business isn't making enough money to do it, then we're not going to do it. Mm-hmm. We've never reinvested any money in the business since we started our initial investment. And so the business pays for these things to happen. And we make sure that we're taking a paycheck too.
Excellent.
And so we're just, you know, like, we're not like, oh, let's just go produce $45,000 cards and figure out how to pay for it later. Like, we know that we're going to be able to pay for it. And so that's like one thing that I think has been really good for us throughout the years, is that, like, we have to have a salary. This is our only job. And it has been since 2011. So we have to make all those numbers work.
I love that you said that. Thank you. Because I do feel like, you know, this is a business. We're all running businesses, and therefore we need to look at the hard costs, and we need to be paying ourselves, and we need to be thinking about things like retirement or like just scaling the business and all these different things that when you're just starting out, it might feel a little overwhelming. But if you're, you know, once you've got that product down and you're moving forward with different things, like, these are the big girl things you got to do. For running a business.
And we have to make sure our margins work on every new product. Like, it's not okay for us to be like, oh, we really want to do this, but we're just going to take less of a profit margin on it.
Right.
If we're not going to make our profit margin on it, we walk away from that product, because, you know, you still have to pay a rep 20%. There are so many additional costs in each product that if, you know, all the work and effort that goes into it, if we're not going to be making money off of it at the end of the day, then it it just isn't going to work for us.
Yes. I love hearing you say that. I'm going to ask you a question, and if you're not comfortable answering it, just tell me. Is there a certain profit margin that you aim for with every new product category that you launch?
At least 50%.
Okay.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
I can't answer math questions.
At this point, we absolutely factor in double markup, like a normal retail markup for us. And then we actually back out potential commissions or large retailer discounts.
Yep.
So that is also covered in our product.
Awesome. Which large retailers are you guys selling to?
Paper Source, Anthropology, Terrain Beholden, the Urban.
Yep, the Urban family.
And then, yeah.
Yeah, family. Can you share a little bit about how that all came to be? Did they seek you out? Did you pitch them?
They sought us out. I think Paper Source saw us first at the stationery show, and Anthropology must have just seen our product because they came to us before we even showed at the stationery show.
Nice. That's where your product speaking for itself is huge. It's huge. They know how to find you guys. So that's awesome. Okay. So speaking of the profit margins and knowing that you guys are making money and you're paying yourselves, that becomes a lot more tricky when you have a business partner from the standpoint that there's two of you pulling from the pie. So you need to be extra conservative with things. How do you guys split responsibilities as business partners? Who handles what?
It's changed a lot over the years. It's been very, very flexible. I mean, we've done so many different things as a business. So if, you know, one of our workloads has become too much, we'll say like, hey, you need to start doing this. So I feel like I could cover, you know, the whole business for a certain amount of time. And I think Emma could do the same because like when she took maternity leave, I ran everything by myself. And then, you know, it will be the exact same if and when that happens for me. So, you know, we have to be able to do that. But currently how we split it is I do a lot of the like customer service end, so like typing up orders, dealing with accounts, dealing with reps. I obviously do the calligraphy and that, you know, all collaborative design process, but Emma handles the actual like designing physical design files, getting everything ready for print. I also handle like POs and getting everything to production and how many we're ordering and reordering and stuff like that, the inventory.
Okay.
Is that, yeah. Did I cover it, Emma?
Yeah. Yeah. And then all of our inventory and shipping happens from Austin, and Bailey's mom works for us and manages that portion. So I'm also the point person here to make sure everything's organized and running smoothly and check things when they come in to make sure that it's not a disaster, which luckily, knock on wood, it's been pretty good so far. So
good.
I guess you issue checks too. You issue checks. I do commission reports.
I pay us.
Yeah.
You make sure everybody gets their dollars.
Yeah.
So you guys live and work in different towns. And so my next question actually ties into what you were just starting to talk about is how do you manage that? So it sounds like you have all products shipped to you in Austin, Emma, and then Bailey's mom helps with production or fulfillment?
Mm-hmm. Yes. She manages fulfillment. She has an assistant. So there's two of them that work on pulling all of the orders. And I will note that as of the end of the year, we stopped taking all custom business. So we only do wholesale now, which we're super excited about, another pivot. But I don't know if the door's not completely closed to doing custom work. We did start doing some branding work and other client work, but for now we're not taking any new clients.
Can you talk about what went into that decision?
You know, it's mainly the workflow. Like, we have finally gotten in a really good groove with product release and like what needs to happen along the way for each release and fitting clients in. It's just like a completely different mindset and it's completely different time constraints. And we just we've been wanting to move away from it for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so we just took the leap. We were like, let's just jump and trust that it's going to work out. And so far, I mean, it's been great.
I'm so happy to hear that for you guys, because I'm seeing a lot of shifting in our industry right now. I'm seeing a lot of shifting even just within our bootcamp community of people that are transitioning and they're pivoting and they're going. And I saw this in my own business too. You know, when I first started, I was doing custom work. I was selling retail through my online shop. I was selling wholesale, and wholesale was the area I really wanted to grow. But if you look at all three of those, you know, channels, sales channels, like you, as you mentioned, they're very different. They require different strategies and workflows, and it's just hard. And so, you know, I ended up turning my focus mainly to the wholesale side and discontinuing custom as well. And, but we're seeing a lot of that right now in our community. And I am pleased to hear that people are really focusing on the things that are the making the most sense financially, but also keeping them captivated and interested too. I think that that's a big part in staying motivated and keeping our work fresh. But it's interesting to hear you talk about the workflow. Can you talk a little bit more about how you guys manage workflow being in two separate cities? Like, do you use online systems and, or, you know, do you have regular meetings that you do? Like, how do you manage that?
We save everything to Dropbox and they sync to both of our computers. So we essentially like have one computer at all times. So we have constant access. That's been the easiest way for us. And then I think the division of labor is so clear now that Bailey, you know, she does her thing, I do my thing, and then we set up weekly meetings as needed. But in general, I think we both work really well when we're like alone and uninterrupted. Mm-hmm. So being in different cities and not around each other all the time is probably a complete blessing.
yeah.
We just distract each other. So, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of the week at this point, like we kind of just leave each other alone and we do our thing and then we get together. And there's times in which we have more design meetings, like when we're developing product or going, you know, designing a new line, we'll have a lot more design meetings and we'll screen share. So I'll just share my screen and we'll go through the designs and change things around or change colors or do whatever we need to do. And it's kind of like being in the same room.
Yeah. I know. Technology is pretty amazing nowadays. I had a meeting with my team yesterday and we were all on Zoom, you know, chat thing. And it was like Brady Bunch style. It was, I don't know. It's amazing what we can do from, you know, remote locations nowadays.
So, yeah, it's worked. I mean, it's worked really well. So
cool.
Can't complain. Yeah.
We've also been doing it for a long time. I think, Emma, when did you move? 12? No,
13. 2011. Oh, back. Yeah, we've also moved all over the place.
We both lived in LA for a few years, like me longer than Emma. It's been nutsy.
Well, so you guys have, while you've owned your business, you've dealt with partners moving, you know, business partners moving. You've dealt with a maternity leave. You've done a lot of remote work. I mean, these are pretty big transitions and challenges. You've talked about the pivoting in your business from a product offering standpoint, or, you know, what you're selling and who you're targeting. But like from an operational standpoint, like how did you get through those transitions? And I mean, I guess let's look at the maternity leave if you're open to talking about that, Emma. Like how long did you take off and how did, you know, Bailey, did you recruit extra help when you did that? Like what? I don't know. Do you mind walking us through that?
I think we just slowed things down. I took 3 months, but it wasn't, I mean, I still talked to Bailey. There were still a couple things that I had to do during that time. And then after that 3 months, I was back part-time. I think it was Sydney was 2 when she really started having like full day care. And so it's definitely like is taxing, you know, like my limited hours and like we can't work together in the same capacity. But that being said, in the last like 4 years since Sydney was born, I mean, we've grown the business more than we've ever grown it.
Yeah.
And I think we're both in a much better, more balanced place with our workflow. And I think that it's just because we constantly check in with each other and we're like, what's working, what's not working. And when there's something that's not working for one of us, we actively work for a solution to it. So if we need to switch around people's responsibilities or let go of parts of the business because it's just not working into our schedule anymore, that's what we do.
That's awesome.
So I think that we prioritize each other's happiness in life over everything else.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the last thing to go that was pretty recent was our custom stamp business, which we had, you know, over 200 designs on our website, and we still get emails and calls weekly, almost daily, for where can I order these things. But I was handling all of that on top of, so that was like, you know, orders coming directly through our website, and then me having to do custom proofs and custom calligraphy and scan it in and create those stamps. And then having to send them to production, and then our shipping team having to get them and then ship them out in a completely different process. So while we were still making a really good amount of money at it, it was, again, that sort of very separate business that felt it like ended up as the wholesale like had grown over this last year, over 2016, it felt very off. So at the end of the year, like basically right before our holiday closure, I think we just like took them all down off of the website and stopped selling them. And we'll definitely service, you know, previous clients or people that want to reorder. Like I still make them, but we're not going to do them on our website anymore.
Yeah. So. You must have felt relief though when those came
down. It's awesome. Yeah. I'm like so much happier. But I think that's what to what Emma was saying. It's like, that's hard to say like, okay, well, you know, we're making this much money at it. Like, is it worth letting go? Can we recoup this from wholesale? I mean, it was the same thing when we did let go of custom wedding design invitations, when we let go of the chinas, like, okay, if that's like a third of your business, like, you know, we're going to put more energy towards this, but is it actually going to be recouped? It's definitely, you know, a leap of faith.
Definitely.
With those transitions. But I think when something starts feeling like incredibly out of place, like no matter, I mean, it'll let you know, like, it's not like we were making so much money at it that it was like, oh, well, this is like neck and neck with wholesale, but it's still, you know, walking away from thousands and thousands of dollars over the year.
Yeah.
So.
But I love how you talked about going back to what Emma said about prioritizing happiness, at, you know, in the business decisions. It sounds like that was what was really playing into this decision with the stamps. You know, like, yes, you're foregoing the thousands of dollars, but at the same time, the work process and your happiness is definitely something that probably the relief again.
The relief definitely. Yeah. And it's definitely much better. And it was like, it wasn't just me. It was also, you know, my mom and our shipping team, like it was a whole nother thing for them to like test the stamps and then get them ready, like put all the little like cute accoutrements together for our, you know, like our cute stamp shipping. So it was like stocking all of those things and getting those packaged is entirely different than shipping a wholesale order.
Oh yeah. Well, and gift products like the stamps, as you mentioned, are very different than just even a greeting card that's cello sleeved, you know, with an envelope. Actually, let's talk about that, because you guys have some beautiful packaging. How do you weigh into your decision making, you know, making it feel special and different and not just a cello sleeve? I mean, I know we're all using cello sleeves, but like, how do you take the ordinary and make it extraordinary in terms of your packaging, but while also still being conservative with your, you know, with your costs, your production costs?
We're pretty basic, actually. Mm-hmm. We do the cello sleeves with our cards and then, you know,
and our notebooks. Mm-hmm.
Cough, cheapest envelope we can find. And then, but you know, it kind of is like, you know, if we could spend all the money in the world on packaging, we'd have the most amazing packaging ever. And so we always just try to figure out what we can do within our budget that's on brand that we're happy with.
Yeah.
And that's not always like the most beautiful thing, you know, but it's clean and it works and it's on brand.
Yeah.
So I think our packaging right now is extremely practical. And so we're just like, what's the bare minimum we can do and still make it feel special?
Yeah.
And then we got smart. We do have some labels that go on the back of some of the products, like the notebooks and stuff. And then we got smart, and I'm trying to design whatever information needs to go on the product, on the back of the product, so that you can see it through the clear bag and the clear sleeve.
Yeah.
And so slowly we're like trying to every time we do something new, like how can we get all the information that's needed on there without having to pay for an additional labor mm-hmm. or label and the labor of putting it on. But so that's like, okay, that's just a graphic design challenge of like, let's make this look really awesome, but also save us money by not having a label.
Right. And so just to expand upon that for the audience, like that label, let's say it's just a cello sleeve with a label, you're still having to purchase the labels. You're still having to account for your time of putting the label on. You're having to, you know, there's time and money factors that go into that. Whereas, as you mentioned, you know, on, for example, the back of greeting cards, we recommend putting all that pertinent information like the SKU number and your copyright info and all those things on the back just to make it one less step that you have, one less touch point to getting it out in the world.
Well, those labels aren't cheap.
No. I know, they really aren't. but one good example of like being kind of thrifty and still making it look good is that in January, we came out with box card collections because we designed by collection. We're like, okay, the Indigo collection, it's a box, assorted box set of 8 cards that all came from the Indigo collection. And in an ideal world, I would have loved to design some like beautiful box that they live in. But what I ended up doing is making a really pretty printed sleeve on cardstock that we had scored, and it folds cleanly and perfectly around our clear box.
Nice.
And so it has that same look on the shelf, but we're not having to, you know, have a super expensive box made where we're committing. I can send it to the print shop and we can print 100 at a time, and it's not this big commitment.
Right.
So that was like a really, I think, smart way. And again, it's not our dream packaging, but it's pretty and it's impactful, and you're going to see it from across the room.
Well, and it's on brand and it's on budget, like you talked about earlier. I think that's something that a lot of people, when they're starting out, grapple with. Like, they want their packaging to be extraordinary. And I am always cautioning people, like, yes, you want it to be pretty, but you need to make sure that it works financially. Because as we talked about earlier, if you're not making money on this, you shouldn't be selling it. You know, like, it's not a viable business at that point. So
exactly. I am such a sucker for beautiful packaging. I mean, that will sell me on products. Yeah. Like, I'll be anywhere and be like, oh, but this box is so pretty. Yeah. I like don't care what's inside. So it's something we strive. Maybe someday.
No, and I'm not trying to discount the impact that that has. But I do think it's important to be conscientious of your costs and how, you know, the packaging plays into the overall pricing of everything. So
yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, we have mortgages to pay, so we can't be like eating into that. So we have to make sure that we're covered, and then like, can we afford that pretty box?
Totally.
Which we did do a custom box for our May mailer, which I'm excited about.
Ooh, I can't wait to see it.
We're not also not going to the stationery show this year.
So you're doing a bigger mailer this year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can't wait to see it. Okay, so let's talk about success. I love asking this question because everyone defines success differently. And frankly, if you asked me what success was even a year ago or 6 months ago, it would probably be different than my definition of it now. But how do each of you define success in your business? Bailey, you want to start?
Sure. I think, I don't know, we talk about it a lot, actually, but I think we're very financially motivated and always have been. Like, I want to both fulfill my creative desires and like create a very successful business that can pay us and continue to grow and continue to like pay us more like we had a normal job, if you will. I think that benchmarking it against, you know, like what my husband makes and like what friends make. So like what I would maybe theoretically be making had I not jumped into being self-employed in 2009, like is a good thing for me. I personally wouldn't sacrifice my salary for like self-employment, especially this long term. Like, this is a long term thing and has been for me for a long time. Like, I don't ever intend on being employed again, like, if I can. So it needs to make sense long term.
Absolutely.
I love that. And I mean, I tell people all the time, it's like, it's a creative business, but like my actual like creative time is minimal. It's like a normal job.
It's disappointing, huh? We need to carve out more time for the creative.
You know, to be honest, it is and it's not, because I think actually I did do very creative work. I did full-time calligraphy for years and I burnt out. Like what I loved, I like started to really, you know, not despise, but just kind of like dread going to my table and crank out envelopes. And now I'm studying, I'm back to teaching, I'm really inspired to learn and to interpret a new style. Like, so actually my job being less creative has fulfilled my creativity more. Like it's freed me up to do what I want to do again.
I love that. It's probably made your creative time more special too, and that you can really enjoy it.
Yeah. And I think that it also like influences our product, because, you know, I'll be studying different lettering styles and then that will, you know, transition into, you know, lettering on a note, on a greeting card or on a notebook, mm-hmm. or whatever. I think it's just constantly evolving. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Me being inspired definitely helps. And I wasn't when I had to do like just, you know, envelopes or client work over and over.
Oh, well, thank you for that. What about you, Emma? How do you define success in your business?
Well, similarly to Bailey, but also I, in the past year, have felt like success for us is getting reorders, mm-hmm. and knowing that not only buyers like our stuff, but people are going into stores and picking our products over all of the other products in that store. And that's just like incredibly gratifying to know that the work that we're putting out, that we love, that we're doing for ourselves, you know, it's not solving a problem for a client, it's designing products that we want to design, and that it's selling, is one of the most rewarding things I think that we've done in this entire 6 years of being in business. Mm-hmm. But also on a personal level or personal business level, success for me is having a healthy work-life balance. And of course, being able to afford to do that, but having time to take, I can take an afternoon off and spend it with my daughter, or go ride horses, or be outdoors, or Bailey can go and like work in her garden. You know, it's not, I burn out. I can't work until 2 a.m. Like it's just, neither one of us can do that. And so being able to have like reasonable work hours, more than reasonable, I would say, but this lovely like work life balance and being able to have a family time and like have time for that is super important. And so, I mean, the other day I was like, wow, I can't believe I get paid a salary and I get to do this. Like, this is amazing, you know? So it feels really, really good. And I think that we're finally, like everybody says, it takes you 5 years to finally hit your groove. But I really do think that we've finally hit a groove where we're like, all right, we really enjoy doing this. We see a future for it. We see ways in which we can expand it in a way that we can hire help for it. Mm-hmm. And so that feels like success for sure.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. I loved hearing.
Not to say we haven't worked crazy hours or.
Oh, no, of course.
Yeah. Well, you're entrepreneurs. But, no, of course you have.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course we have, definitely. But I think we're hitting like a really nice sweet spot where it's like it's a healthy balance. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels good.
It's finally feeling really good and right.
Yeah. So. That's great. No, burnout's real. You know, we mm-hmm. all experience it at different times in our careers or in our entrepreneurial journey. And so I think that's a huge success that you guys have been able to find such balance both individually as well as collectively as business owners in your business. Okay. So tell us what's next for Antiquera. What do you guys have coming up that you want to share?
So for years and years and years, we've wanted to get into textiles. So that's like that, we don't have anything in the works, but that's a goal, is to really start to expand the artwork and expand the pattern and get into textiles and wallpaper and other home items.
That'd be beautiful with your work.
Yeah. Me with a fashion background and Bailey loves to sew. Like it's just such a natural progression for us that I do see finding partnerships in the future is probably where we're going to put some energy. And also, like we've discussed, like finding revenue streams that don't involve product production. So mm-hmm. we're hoping for some licensing agreements in the future. That's
nice.
That's what we're putting out there.
Excellent. Yeah. You guys, your work would be beautiful on other products, especially in the textile and fashion. I love that. Cool. Well, tell us, where can people find you online?
It's shopantiquaria.com. And our Instagram handle is Antiquaria Design.
Excellent. Well, thank you, ladies, both for, I appreciate your time and appreciate you sharing your story with us and all of your expertise that you've gathered over the, you know, the course of growing this business. It's been such an amazing journey to watch from the outside. It has. It's been really fun for me. I mean, you guys know that I always feel like a little bit of a mama bear to all of you guys just watching from the outside and seeing what you're doing. But I've been really impressed with all that you guys have done. I think I first heard of you even before you guys came to Paper Camp through Noel's blog, Oh So Beautiful Paper, and just fascinated by your work. So it's been fun being a small part in your business journey. And I really thank you for coming back on and sharing your story with all of us here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, Katie.
Hey guys, it's Katie Hunt from Trade Show Bootcamp, and I have some exciting news. You have all been patiently waiting for the return of our Paper Camp e-course, and I'm excited to tell you that it's here. This is a virtual program that will last for 5 weeks. We'll kick things off in September and head into October. You'll get new videos to watch each week on your own, and we'll have a live Q&A call every week with me and special guest experts. But you gotta act fast, because registration closes on September 15th. If you've been wanting to get your products on retail store shelves, if you want to launch or refine your wholesale program, or maybe you want to exhibit at large-scale trade shows, this is the program for you. To learn more and register, head to tradeshowcamp.com and click on Paper Camp eCourse. That's tradeshowcamp.com, then Paper Camp eCourse. We look forward to having you there. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them up-level, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.